Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Breakfast with Boz being served by Wahoo. I am your host, Ian Boswell, keeping the sourdough alive. My wife and I traded cookbooks with a neighbor down the road, and Gretchen found a little recipe to use some of the sourdough, another sourdough crust, and a breakfast tart. I'm going to make a little disclaimer here that we actually had this for dinner last night, and we're repurposing it as breakfast this morning because it fits in quite well. A little bit garlicky for a breakfast, but we had it last night, so we're already stinking. We'll stink for the rest of the day. Gretchen, tell us a little bit more about this garlic tart.
Don't knock it too hard. It's not that garlicky because it is a caramelized garlic tart. So it's a little bit sweet. And the cookbook that we borrowed from our neighbor and found this recipe in is called Plenty by Yotam Ottolenghi. It's kind of like a quiche. It's got cheese in it and the caramelized garlic, whole cloves. I'll let you look up the recipe because it's a good one and I don't want to botch it up, but it is pretty tasty, I think. I would make it again.
Dinner for breakfast or breakfast for dinner, have it whichever way you will. We're going to finish up eating this tart, so I hope you're ready to sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode of Breakfast with Boz being served by Wahoo. In the episode today, I am joined by Jim Miller, who is the head of elite athletics over at USA Cycling. Jim and I have a long history dating back to 2006 when I took my first trip over to Belgium to represent the U.S. national team. Jim was an incredibly valuable asset to myself and to so many young athletes on their journey to the top. And looking forward, that is Jim's goal with USA Cycling to continue developing the next generation of American cyclists. So with the 2021 season just around the corner, I figured it was a great time to ring up Jim and ask him a few questions, one of which, the current state of American cycling. As many of you know, over the last 12 months, there has been an incredible boom in the sport. Either people rediscovering cycling or people for the first time in their life wanting to get a taste of what this beautiful sport is all about. So I asked Jim about that. I also asked how he anticipates all these new people in the sport. How does that look down the road when it comes to the performance side of cycling? Are we going to find the next champion that was born in 2020 who came out of this boom in the industry? We speak about that. We speak about road racing here in the U.S. What does the future of road racing look like? We talk about the rise of gravel. And lastly, we talk about the upcoming Olympics in Tokyo. So without further ado, let's hear from Jim Miller, head of elite athletics over at USA Cycling. Well, I am joined now by Jim Miller, head of elite athletics at USA Cycling, leading the development of the next generation of American cyclists. Jim has coached numerous Olympic champions, Tour de France contenders, and countless national champions. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we worked together extensively for my years coming through the ranks at USA Cycling as a junior and as a U23 rider. I went off to race in the World Tour. You took a different job, but now you're back at USA Cycling. How is it to be back at the Federation of Cycling here in North America?
That's good. You know, I have to say, I worked at USAC from 2002, 2001, really, through 17. And then in 18 and 19, I took a small hiatus, went to Training Peaks, did something different, which was awesome for me. I learned a ton. It gave me an opportunity to think differently about things and also gives you a chance to reflect and have some perspective on what you had done and accomplished versus when you're just stuck in the daily grind where you just sort of just go from task to task and try to manage the needs as they come at you. But yeah, I'm back, you know, at the end of the day, like I told everybody at Training Peaks, I'm like, we are who we are. And while I enjoyed doing some biz dev, I do like high performance. I love being in high performance. I love being in the battle. And I will always say that winning is the greatest addiction in the world. And once you get a taste of it, you just crave it. So I ended up coming back and super excited to do so. Picked a hard year and a hard time to come back, but you know, I'm here and looking forward to making a mark when we can.
Yeah, well, and you work within the high performance side of USA Cycling. You know, before we started recording, we were talking about the Olympic team and world championships and national team. But before we get to that, I want to ask you about kind of a broad question about the state of American cycling. And it is such a strange year. The last 12 months have been strange because we've seen this huge boom in people either restarting cycling or getting into cycling for the first time. But we've seen this, obvious decline of events and races just because they've been either, canceled or postponed. But from the inside, what's kind of the general overview of this current state of American cycling?
It's certainly a balancing rock, isn't it? The silver lining of 2020 will be that millions of people start riding bikes again. Hopefully the next superstar started riding his bike in 2020, and hopefully 2035 we have a emerging champion that came of this. The flip side of it, is like these events have taken a beating. They typically are year to year, and they need athletes, they need participants, they need sponsors, they need all of it to continue and survive. And hopefully everybody took the appropriate measures early enough to be able to get through 2020 and live to fight another day. But, I'm afraid that when we come out of this and events start returning, that we're going to notice some of them aren't there anymore.
Well, and, one thing that I'm sure you've seen kind of returning to USA Cycling is, the rise of gravel. But I'm curious, is there any sort of plan? Because you and I both, we love road racing, whether it's, having raced ourselves or watching on TV or, speaking to our friends and athletes and colleagues who are still racing at the World Tour level. How do you kind of see road racing here in North America, especially kind of return to what it was? When I look at it, I came through an age of American cycling where road racing was almost in its glory day. There were riders here domestically making great salaries just racing in the US. And, obviously a lot of riders wanted to go to Europe and race, but there was an option to race here domestically. Do you see that coming back, or is there a plan or strategy to kind of bring back American road racing?
Yeah, this is a really good question. I too am fearful for American road racing. Prior to COVID, we had lost a ton of events. We had lost a ton of teams. We have a large number of athletes that have moved on to other disciplines. That in itself isn't bad. I think I look at a bike as a tool, and it doesn't really matter what the tool is. You can always race it. So whether you move to gravel, you move to mountain bikes, you move to cyclocross, for me, that's not important, but not having events is. And, as you were a young guy, you had a lot of really good American stage races. There just aren't that many anymore. And there aren't a lot of opportunities to road race. You can do some road racing. You can do some stage racing. You can race a fair amount of crits still around, but as a whole, it was hurting beforehand. And I'm really fearful what happens post COVID.
Well, and I'm sure that there's still a huge amount of spectators and fans here in the US who would love to see, American riders going over to Europe, racing in the Tour, and, hopefully at some point seeing, the next American winner of the Tour de France. But that, from my perspective, it seems like that pathway is, in a way, it's more difficult now because there's not as much of an easy kind of line of sight of junior races to, regionally, then nationally, and then you potentially get selected for the national team. And how is the national team going to select and kind of scout riders who are in that kind of up and coming age? Is it something where they are looking to, some of these bigger gravel events to see like, okay, there's some, 17, 18 year olds who are performing and maybe they haven't raced on the road, but we want to try to get them over to Europe and throw them in some kermesses or whatever it may be over in Europe.
Yeah, that is a good question too. I think when we think about athlete development, we will look at all bikes, right? If you're doing gravel races and you stand out, we're gonna notice. If you're doing mountain bike racing and you stand out, we'll notice. If you're racing cyclocross and you stand out, we'll eventually notice that as well. I guess the silver lining for me with road racing and the sport of cycling is, a couple things. One, sports need, especially these niche sports, and it's just not cycling. You can go through them all, triathlon, et cetera, et cetera. They need good, for the sport to be healthy domestically, it does need a good federation. And federations need a good, healthy domestic sport so they can pursue international success as well. So they're all intertwined and they're all really important. I do think that cycling tends to be somewhat cyclic, and that there's always, where one thing gets turned down, there's an opportunity out somewhere else. So, in the 90s, after the 90s, late 90s, mountain bike had a fall from grace. I don't know if that's probably the right word, but had a decline. Road racing had a large incline. Road racing has started to decline. Mountain biking, gravel events started ascending. So it's really cyclic, and there are a lot of really good gravel events. There are some really good mountain bike events that have come back. There's good series, Epic Series, U.S. Cups. I mean, there are good domestic race series for mountain bike, again, which will make a healthy international population of Americans. But wherever something gets turned down, then you have this opportunity for the rise of road racing again, because there's a void to be filled. And, you know, eventually, while we all love riding gravel, and I mean, every road racer I've ever known rides dirt roads for as long as the day is long and are happy to do it. Back in the day, we did it in 23s, and in your era, you probably ride in 25s, and now you ride in 32s and 38s. So the wheel size has changed, but the desire to be away from traffic hasn't. And eventually, you know, riding a bike fast, like a road race, is fun. Riding criteriums is fun. And when you've gone slow for a while, going fast again is fun. So it'll rebound. But yeah, for the near future, I'm it's going to be a slow go, I'm afraid.
Well, I mean, it's in a way, it's almost ironic that we speak about, you know, kind of maybe a struggling road scene here in the U.S. because while we, you know, maybe some events have gone away, you know, we do see this, you know, crop of young, incredibly successful athletes, you know, whether it's road, mountain bike, you know, cyclocross, you know, somehow, you know, kind of the cream always rises to the top, and people who are, you know, motivated and driven to make it to that level still seem to find their way there. Kind of going forward, how is USA Cycling planning to, you know, really just make sure that those athletes have the best pathway to get to where they want, which is, you know, for most sports and disciplines, that's, you know, somehow finding a way to move to Europe and making that their home base and competing in the biggest events in the world that largely take place over in Europe.
Yeah. I would say a couple of things about that just straight away is there's always multiple pathways. So, you know, a lot of times we get caught up on what's the pathway? What is the pathway to get here or there? In most cases, there's like multiple pathways to get to that point. You know, what we can do is we can put together the best pathway we can and provide the best opportunity we can to move you along that pathway. But there'll always be multiple pathways. You know, I think a couple changes we've made, I talked about when I left, and you get this opportunity to have perspective and look back at what you've done. For me, leaving USAC, and once I emotionally detached from the company and was able to rationally examine what I did or what I didn't do and to somewhat ruthlessly evaluate it, it gives you a really interesting perspective for me. I think I always knew I'd be back in sport and high performance, so I did take the time to think about it and be rather ruthless on myself in terms of what I would do differently if I had the opportunity again. So we've put a couple different pieces of opportunities within our pathway going to the Olympics. And I think they've come out, everybody's pretty familiar with them. One being the Olympic Development Academy. I think it was misunderstood from the get-go. And, you know, maybe we didn't present it loud enough by ourselves, and others presented it for us, which didn't paint the picture that we had the vision for. But when I look at pathways, at least from a federation perspective, starting at the top, I mean, we have Olympic teams, right? That's what we do. We're trying to develop Olympians and generate Olympic medals. That's what our charter is underneath the U.S. Olympic Committee. Beneath that, you have world championship teams. Very few times will you find an Olympic medal winner or Olympian that wins a medal that hadn't performed at world championships. So performing at those world championships is an important step in that process. In the world championship teams, then this is where I think that professional teams sit. In the most robust sense of professional teams, I'm talking about, you know, five different disciplines here, not just road, but for me, they sit beneath world championship teams. If we just narrow this down into world tour men, then potentially they sit above worlds, and something like the tour is more important than the world championships, or, you know, even I think some of these guys would argue that it's more important than the Olympics itself. But just broadly speaking, I think professional teams sit underneath world championships. And then underneath that, you have national teams. National teams, in my mind, are Nations Cups, World Cups, Supercrosses, FISU events for BMX freestyle, and at all levels, right? 17, 18, U23, elite. Underneath national teams, then you would have these elite U23 or junior teams like Hot Tubes or Lux or Action, Evolo. They all fit into that. You could say a team like 2020 sits in there. You could, you know, you probably have a lot of images here. And then beneath that is this Olympic Development Academy. And the Olympic Development Academy is really the idea behind it is that it provides opportunity. If you're a national level rider or a, you know, let's say you're in the end of the first third of national level riders and you desire to go on this path and become this professional athlete and you don't get brought into one of these bigger elite junior U23 teams, where do you go? I mean, where do you get an opportunity to race races? Where do you get an opportunity to work with good coaches or be in a team that's your peers and not your dad's master's team that picks up two juniors because they feel like it's a good thing to do? So that was the goal of the Olympic Development Academy, is to provide opportunity and to leverage ourselves with our own infrastructure and our own knowledge and our own experience to provide to a large amount of people rather than just a select few that might make it in the national team. So for me, that's really how I see the stepping stones. There's a big piece where collegiate and high school racing also fit in. I think they're probably intermixed at that ODA level or below the ODA level, but they also play a significant role. And you know, collectively, we all fit some sort of role here that then creates this sort of pathway to an athlete's future where they want to be.
So is the ODA, the Olympic Development Academy, is that something that, I guess, just a way of kind of restructuring, not the national team, but as a way to give more riders an opportunity? You know, I guess it's in a sense, it's another pathway. You know, you see teams, like you said, Avolo, Action, you know, Hot Tubes, Lux, that provide riders, you know, a certain amount of exposure to Europe. But they're, for example, we take someone like Andrew Talansky, who, you know, you and I both know well, who wasn't racing on a team that was getting international exposure. Someone like him, for example, could sign up for the ODA and then get those opportunities to be on, you know, essentially the national team to race in Europe in these big events and really get the exposure they need to kind of take their racing level to the next level.
Yeah, I would, you know, I separate the ODA and the national team completely. The national team is absolutely merit-based. It sits way higher on the pyramid. A few people get access to it, but not a lot of people, right? I mean, it's prestigious. We all want to be part of the national team, but not all of us are talented enough to get there. The ODA sits low enough that it provides an opportunity to some really high-level racing, provides opportunity to high-level coaching, high-level training camps, sports science, things that you just cannot probably put together on your own. And it, you know, through that collection, then it gives you a chance to show yourself, and you're going to get to go to good races. You're going to get to race in races that you probably wouldn't have if you stayed in your regional team. You're going to get to train with your peers. And it's honestly, if you're 17, 18 years old or U23, it's much more fun to train in a training camp with your peers than it is with a bunch of older men. So it's really just it's about providing an opportunity. And yes, through that opportunity, you'll have enough chances to show yourself that hopefully we can get you into one of these bigger teams, the Luxes or the Hot Tubes or the Avolos and Actions.
Yeah, well, thanks for explaining that, because I went to USA Cycling and kind of dug through the ODA a little bit, but that makes it much more clear to me. Essentially, it's its own entity. It's its own team that you can be a part of. And if you perform at the academy, then you could be, you know, you could obviously be selected for, you know, a team like Action or Avolo, but you could also be, you know, then selected from there to race with the national team, almost like graduate to the national team from the Olympic Development Academy.
Yep. And it's, yeah, I mean, you know, we're definitely focusing at the top end of the sport. So that we never lose sight on, but this is hopefully an attempt or an opportunity to broaden the base a little bit and provide more opportunity and honestly leverage ourselves and our own experience and knowledge and network to allow others to have those opportunities.
Well, and I kind of want to ask you about, you know, you've been in cycling a long time and I wouldn't say you're a traditionalist, but you come from a world where, you know, getting riders to the Olympic is, you know, that's been your goal, and to get, you know, Olympic medals is, you know, that's your mission. And you've been highly successful at that with, you know, Christian Armstrong and, you know, other athletes at the Olympics, you know, the women's team pursuit team. How do you, I mean, you kind of already answered this, but like, how do you feel about this new kind of arena of cycling? When we look at esports and gravel that, you know, they're so new and they're not sanctioned and they have riders, you know, who are coming from different sports. And how do you as a governing body kind of begin to embrace this new world of cycling and kind of different disciplines that are emerging?
Traditional is that's a great word. The other day I was talking with a group and I said, you know, the thing is, we all look at cycling and we all realize that there has to be some sort of change if we don't want this sport to die at the vine. But as soon as you make change or you create change or you discuss change, then all the traditionalists stand up and be like, wait a minute, this is how we've done it. This is, we race Gila, then we race Joe Martin, then we race Gila, then we race Redlands, then we, right? They like the way it's been. And the truth is this sport is always going to evolve and it's always going to adapt and it's always going to be fluid. And you have to at least be open-minded enough to see the changes and see the opportunity in the changes. Like we said earlier, I never ride on the road. I always ride gravel. I've always ridden gravel since I began racing bikes. And that was now it's a long time ago. But when somebody does a great performance on a gravel bike or in a gravel race, if an 18-year-old kid gets second or third, for instance, at Belgian Waffle Ride, I know that was a damn good ride. I'm like, I don't have to have a sanctioning body behind it to say, qualify that or say now that's a legit result. I know that's a legit result. So I think while I've been in this, been in the sport for a long time, I'm definitely not a traditionalist. And there's so many opportunities to race your bike and do it differently and find your own way that I love it. And in particular, gravel, right? I mean, this whole ability to be a privateer is awesome. And now you can pursue the sport the way you like to on your term. And I think it's going to open up a ton of opportunity for people to continue racing bikes that may have been pushed out of the sport if a team didn't rehire them. So I love it. I think it's great. Where it all fits in is always to be determined. But I think that ultimately a market determines that and not anybody in particular.
Well, on a more kind of solid note and something you're more in touch with, how does everything look for USA Cycling heading towards Tokyo 2021?
I think good. We have good teams. We have good athletes. We put some really audacious goals in front of ourselves. And this would have been my fault because I'm the king of audacious goals. I love the big goal. I love chasing the big title. And I tend to drag everybody along with me, whether they like it or not, and put it out there. After Rio in 2016, before I had left USA Cycling, I set some goals for this quad that when I came back, I was really happy we're still there. They were untouched. So they were still pursuing those same goals. Our goals for Tokyo is, first of all, we want to win 7 medals. And just to put that in perspective, since 2000, only 3 teams have won more than have won 6 medals. Nobody's won 7 medals, with the exception of Great Britain, who have crushed every single quad. Our second goal is to win a medal in every discipline. Since the Olympics went to 4 disciplines, no nation has won a medal in every discipline. We have the athletes and we have the teams capable of doing that. I think it's a great goal because it hasn't been done, but two, I think it's within our reach. And then the third goal is to win the women's medal count. It's not a count that you see in USA Today. It's not a medal count that the USOC puts out, but I think we've always been very proud of our women's performances and our women's programs and supporting women. When I first came to USA Cycling, I spent 10 years as the women's national team coach. So I've always taken great pride in what those women were able to accomplish and what they're still able to accomplish. There's some other really good women nations. Great Britain and Netherlands also have great women's programs. They're very supportive of their women. In the last 4 Olympics, they've always beat us in that medal count. I would like to show off our women and beat them in the medal count just to say we did. So those are our 3 big goals, and that's what we set out for ourselves. Like I said, when those were goals I put forward in 16, then I left. And when I came back in March of 2020, I was super happy to see that they had stood the test of time and were for the most part unchanged.
Well, I spent a lot of time at Team Sky and kind of getting the inside information on British cycling and especially their track program. It'd be awesome to see the U.S. women win the team pursuit.
Yeah, that's unequivocally, that's a goal. That's been a goal from day one. That GB team pursuit formula is a tough one to crack.
Yeah, they've got it pretty dialed. But that said, the last 2 cycles, the U.S. women have been chomping at their heels. So maybe Tokyo could be the year that changes.
Yeah, that's what we hope as well. We don't hope. We're working towards it. We got a great team. I think, they've won more world titles in this last 5 years than GB or Australia put together. So we know we're capable of winning. We just got to do it on the day.
Well, I'm going to ask this out of a personal question. Are we going to see any secret equipment come out for the Olympics? I know I was once taken into a room at British Cycling where they held all their secret equipment that would come out they came out for London, their helmets and frames and all that. Is there a special room at USA Cycling where there's a vault with some special skin suits or helmets or anything like that?
Yeah. I've always prided myself in playing this game really well for a small budget. We are literally like the Oakland A's of of federations in cycling with our spending. British Cycling typically, I think they just announced it for the Paris Quad, which is only 3 years now, received £45 million. That's about £15 million a year to spend. We're about a third of that per year, even less, to be honest with you. So I've always prided myself in playing that game really well against them and staying on track and being on par. You know, we rolled out that Felt Superbike for Rio, which was almost 5 years of design and development. We knew it was a significant advantage, but there was a ton of things into that that nobody else saw either, which was super cool. We were always really big on skin suits. British Cycling is about the only skin suit you can't get in your hands to test against. But I can say for an 08, 12, and 16, with the exception of the British skin suit, which we don't know because we weren't able to test it, we always had the fastest skin suit. And that was typically just development with companies within that we were working with, doing exclusives so that they wouldn't unveil it until after the games. But we've always been super, super cutting edge on that. I think we're really, really early adopters on drivetrain technology, so much so that I know Sky actually started testing chains and lubrications after we'd been on that already for months, because the guy doing it for us was doing it for them as well. So I knew we'd beat them there. They just do a great job of selling that secret squirrel room and the vault and what's in it and what's not in it. It's also great sports psychology, right?
Exactly.
And if you think you're getting something special, then you're getting something special, even if it's not special. But you don't know, and the rest of the world doesn't know either. So it must be special.
Yeah. Well, and especially if you're winning, then everyone is wondering, well, what's that special thing? And it might be a placebo, but if you think it's working, then it's working.
Yeah. And I love that game that GB plays. I think they do that far better than anybody else even remotely comes close to. And that's just a sports psychology misdirection. So they get you focusing on one thing and they're doing something entirely different over here and you missed it. It's such a good game.
Well, I'm sure you guys are playing it too. So we'll have to wait a couple more months until Tokyo.
Yes, you will. It's good though. If there was a silver lining in 2020 for me, it was coming in and I thought I was good in March of 2020, was literally going to do a quick inventory on where we're at with Olympic selection and athletes and what had been put in place that we were going to use in 2020. And then we did get this year reprieve, right? So it gave me a year to do that quick analysis of what we had done or hadn't done, and then put a whole program behind what we needed to do and get it going. And I think probably put ourselves in a better position than we would have been.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is one way to look at it, is that, you know, it did give you and, you know, possibly some other nations, but an entire 12-month window to kind of reevaluate things and, you know, really refine everything to make sure that come July, when hopefully all of our athletes are in Tokyo, that they're ready, you know, both physically, mentally, from an equipment side to, you know, to give it their best run at an Olympic medal.
Yep.
Well, Jim, I appreciate you taking the time today. And I know you're a busy man out there in Colorado. So thanks so much for joining me. And I hope to connect soon. And at some point, hopefully we can sit down and have a beer together and talk about the old days of racing at the national team house out of Isegem, Belgium.
Yes, Isegem is always good for a beer.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Well, there we have it, folks. Another episode of Breakfast with Boz being served by Wahoo. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode and my conversation with Jim Miller. As a fan of the sport, I have loved seeing the boom in cycling over the last 12 months. I hope this continues, and I hope as the world begins to clear itself of COVID, that racing returns, and that here in North America, we see a resurgence of road racing, gravel racing, mountain bike, cyclocross, BMX, whatever it may be. I hope to see more people on bikes in the future. So until next week, folks, stay safe, stay healthy, and I'll catch you back here next week on Breakfast with Boz, being served by Wahoo.